did not make the announcement that I did in an effort to kind of start a parade.
Senator Lisa Murkowski changes her mind on gay marriage. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, June 19th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, scientists at the Alaska Sea Life Center keep close tabs on a pregnant stellar sea lion.
She is the apple of Woody's eye. When she is on exhibit, she is his primary focus.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Children need at least 60 minutes of physical activity each day for good health. So to help your children hit that mark, find fun ways to add more activity to their day. Go for a walk together. Sign up for events in your community. Make time to be physically active as a family. Get out and play with your kids every day. For activity ideas and tips on raising healthy kids in Alaska, visit playeveryday.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski announced her support for gay marriage today. She's now the third Republican in the Senate to do so. And as APRN's Peter Granitz reports, Murkowski says same-sex marriage is rooted in conservative principles.
Murkowski penned a lengthy op-ed on her website recalling eating lunch with a family who visited her office. They adopted not one, not two, but four children, and by all accounts seemed like any normal family. The parents are Alaskans, once in the National Guard.
If one had gotten sick, the one who had adopted, the one who was not officially recognized as a spouse, that all the love that she had given those children, every ounce of parenting that she had given, lovingly given, would not have been recognized by the law.
Because the parents are both women. She says that experience, along with the growing acceptance of same-sex marriage throughout the country, forced her to reflect on her stance. She says the decision took about a year to settle on, and she's framing her new position in a conservative light.
Protection of freedom, government limitation in our lives, religious liberty, those are pretty conservative principles.
Many of her colleagues disagree. Arkansas Senator John Bozeman, a fellow Republican, says such a visceral issue like marriage is too serious for party principles.
I think it's beyond that. I mean, I think this is just something that individuals, there's a deeperness to that. I think you have to look at what's best for families, you know, what's best for raising children.
Some observers say the political debate is over, that opposing gay marriage is a losing argument. But Murkowski says the debate is far from finished. Many are still wrestling with the issue. And some, like Utah Senator Orrin Hatch, have settled in opposition.
I just think once you change the definition of marriage, you're asking for it. And frankly, I've been for civil unions, I've been for trying to help solve this problem, but I just don't believe that should happen.
Just 2 months ago, the Republican National Committee affirmed its opposition to gay marriage. Murkowski, who supported Alaska's constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage in 1998, sought the advice of Republican Senator Rob Portman. She wanted to know how his constituents reacted when he announced his support for gay marriage in March. She says she's not looking to lead her party on the issue.
I did not make the announcement that I did in an effort to kind of start a parade. I felt it was important for me to be honest and clear with Alaskans on where I stood.
But she did make the announcement in advance of what is sure to be a major national dialogue on the topic. The Supreme Court is set to rule on two gay marriage cases as early as Thursday. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
With only 2 decision days left for the Supreme Court, rulings that could impact same-sex marriage could come as early as tomorrow. But for same-sex couples in Alaska right now, the only option is to head out of state if they want to get married, and some say that's not likely to change anytime soon. KTOO's Heather Bryant has more.
Alaska was the first state to ban gay marriage through a constitutional amendment in 1998. By statute, same-sex marriages from other states are not recognized. In 2005, the Alaska Civil Liberties Union sued the state and municipality of Anchorage on behalf of 9 gay and lesbian couples who were seeking benefits for their spouses. The Alaska Supreme Court said denying spousal benefits for gay couples was an equal protection violation. The result was that local governments, as well as the state, had to make employment benefits available to people in domestic partnerships. Bobby and Peter Contess and her soon-to-be wife, Amy Oliash, were plaintiffs in the case. Both Peter Contess and Oliash work for state agencies. When the Alaska Supreme Court ruled in favor of the ACLU, Peter Contess described it as a feeling of relief.
It feels a little bit that way with DOMA, with the Defense of Marriage Act now. It's just the right thing to do.
According to DOMA, marriage is between one man and one woman. DOMA's definition prevents married same-sex couples from receiving any federal marriage benefits. Peter Contess and Oliash are planning a fall wedding in Washington State. Washington legalized gay marriage last year. That's when they knew they would get married in Washington, where Peter Contess has family. They wanted to get married in Alaska, but Oliash says they didn't know how long they would have to wait for that to be possible.
Until perhaps there's a shift in the culture here in Alaska, I think that that will be slow in coming.
University of Alaska Anchorage Justice Center professor Jason Brandeis also thinks Alaska isn't there yet.
I just don't see that happening anytime soon. Now, of course, if there was a Supreme Court decision, the United States Supreme Court decision that required the state to change its laws, that would be a whole other story.
The cases before the Supreme Court cover two main issues. United States versus Windsor asks if the Defense of Marriage Act violates the right of equal protection under the law. In this case, Edith Windsor sued the federal government over inheritance taxes she had to pay when her wife passed away. A married heterosexual person does not have to pay the tax when their spouse dies. Hollingsworth versus Perry deals with California's current ban on same-sex marriage. California allowed same-sex marriage until 2004 when the California Supreme Court ordered officials to stop issuing marriage licenses until constitutional challenges to marriage statutes were resolved. Brandeis says marriage has traditionally been a state issue.
So if you think about marriage, you think about the classic wedding ceremony and someone says, you know, by the power vested in me, by the state of Alaska, I now pronounce you husband and wife. You never hear by the power vested in me by the United States of America. Marriage is a creation of state law, though there are a number of federal laws that also affect marriage.
In fact, there are more than 1,000 federal laws and programs that affect married couples, from taxes to adoption. Jim Minnery is the president of Alaska Family Action. He calls same-sex marriage an issue of states' rights, federal overreach, and protecting the sanctity of marriage.
It's a 10th Amendment issue, really, in our view, that they should have the right to define marriage.
Minnery believes same-sex marriage does not uphold essential aspects of traditional marriage, such as monogamy, permanence, and opposite-sex parents.
It's difficult, I think, for the public to grasp, but I think it's important for people to know that as some components of marriage become optional, meaning it's no longer just one man and one woman, who's to say the other components are just as easily able to be tossed aside?
Brandeis describes a number of Supreme Court justices as states' rights advocates who tend to defer to states to define their own social policies. Given the makeup of the court and tenor of the oral arguments heard in March, Brandeis says it's unlikely the court will ban all laws that prohibit same-sex marriage. However, he thinks the rulings will provide language that can be used in future court cases to challenge bans on same-sex marriage. No matter how the court rules, couples like Oliash and Peter Contess will be touched by the decision.
If the Defense of Marriage Act is not struck down, basically that's saying that our relationship of 23 years is not as important, it's not equal to, it's not recognized as any other straight couple would be. That doesn't have just financial impact. Mm-hmm. That has emotional impact.
In Juneau, I'm Heather Bryant.
Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan says he will seek the job of lieutenant governor. The mayor, in a statement early this morning, says he's running because of his love for Alaska and desire to serve the state during a challenging time in history. Sullivan says that in 4 years as mayor, his administration has restored the fiscal health of the city while keeping a lid on property taxes. The Republican says Anchorage is one of the few cities that has seen its bond rating upgraded. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a break in the hot weather, but not for long.
Temperatures will cool just a bit, but then rebound sharply again.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Nanook Commission reminds you that harassing polar bears or taking polar bears with cubs is not only illegal, but it is not part of Native traditions. Together with their management partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Nanook Commission has been working on developing a long-term polar bear deterrence plan to protect Alaska's villages from dangerous polar bear encounters. More at thealaskanannookcommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission, Alaska's people managing Alaska's resources.
Some relief from the heat is in the forecast, followed by even hotter weather. National Weather Service forecaster Carrie Freeman in Fairbanks says high pressure that's brought record warmth to mainland Alaska this week will be briefly interrupted this weekend.
High centered over western Canada, protruding through most of Alaska, and it will persist through the week and with a small relief for Saturday or so as a upper-level system tracks northward over the state, and the temperatures will cool just a bit, but then rebound sharply again.
Freeman says high temperatures could be in the 90s in Fairbanks by the middle of next week. He says there's a chance for some thunderstorms in the interior before that happens.
Lightning is going to be probable as the system moves north over the weekend. Not necessarily over Fairbanks, but certainly around the state, to the west and to the north. Precipitation around Fairbanks area is probably going to be slim to none.
The forecast is a prime scenario for lightning-caused wildfires, and response agencies are ramping up preparedness. Alaska Division of Forestry spokeswoman Maggie Rogers says resources are being put in place.
We have brought on additional air tankers, so right now we have 5 retardant air tankers. 2 are in Palmer because we have fire potential south of the Alaska Range as well. We have 3 here. We also here in Fairbanks at Fort Wainwright have the BLM Alaska Fire Service water scoopers, and we're going to have additional water scooping airplane coming sometime midweek. We also are bringing up supplemental smoke jumpers.
Rogers says elite firefighters, both smoke jumper teams and hotshot crews, are being focused on initial attack, while Type 2 crews take over on established fires. Human-caused wildfires have garnered most of the attention so far this season, with only a few large lightning-caused blazes in the backcountry. One is burning near the Alaska-Yukon border on remote federal land. The Shoshana River fire has burned from the Tetlin National Wildlife Refuge into Wrangell-St. Elias National Park. National Park Service Regional Fire Communications Officer Morgan Worthen says it more than doubled its size this week to nearly 8,000 acres, but is not being fought.
It is not threatening any structures, natural or cultural resources, and it is a benefit to the health of the forest.
Worthen says the fire is being allowed to take its natural course, but is being monitored. A few other large lightning-caused wildfires are burning in southwest Alaska. One is being fought. The Lime Hills fire has consumed 37,000 acres. Fire crews are working to protect Lime Village in case the fire advances toward the community. The world's stellar sea lion population has dropped dramatically over the past few decades, making the population of Alaska's western stock critically endangered. The Alaska Sea Life Center's Lori Polalchek is trying to figure out why. She and her colleagues hope that breeding sea lions in captivity will help them better understand the wild population. Recent sea lion pregnancies at the Sea Life Center haven't been successful, but researchers are hopeful the latest one might go exactly as planned. APRN's Sarah Bernard has the story.
If you listen to them enough, you can tell which animal is vocalizing. They have their own pitch.
Marine mammal scientist Lori Polalchek is one of the lead stellar sea lion researchers at the Alaska Sea Life Center. She says the research they're doing here is pretty unique.
It's the only study breeding program in the world where we're collecting data that hopefully will be turned around and help the population.
Scientists aren't sure why the stellar sea lion population dropped so quickly. It could be competition with fisheries, for instance, or killer whale predation. But studying how they produce successful young could be one key to building their population back up.
Right now, the Sea Life Center has two males, one large breeder, Woody, and one younger male, Pilot, who Pelagic says will fill Woody's shoes eventually.
Pilot at 3 was already bigger than Woody at 5. And just wait until you see Woody. He's an impressive sea lion.
Woody is almost 2,500 pounds. He recently put on an extra 500 just because he shared a wall with Pilot, the younger male, and probably wanted to show him who was boss.
As you can tell, it's that very guttural, very deep, and you can smell a bit of his musk coming through, and it's almost asphyxiating. It's so thick.
There are 4 female sea lions at the center, and one, named Eden, is about to give birth. Pelagic says Eden's not the most attractive sea lion. She's a bit hard of hearing, so often cocks her head to one side, and always has a tongue sticking out.
But she is the apple of Woody's eye. When she is on exhibit, she is his primary focus. He will breed with the other animals, but he always goes back to Eden.
Eden's also a favorite of the trainers and researchers who work with her, in part because she exhibits some unusual behaviors, such as protecting other females when Woody gets too aggressive. There's no evolutionary reason for this.
And so for her to make that move, to put herself in between the two of them, is really sort of endeared her to everyone else. Here she is protecting this other sea lion. And so she is, I would say, just a really special sea lion.
And now that Eden is pregnant, very pregnant, a handful of scientists, vets, and trainers are gathering for an ultrasound. Senior veterinarian Pam Tuomi pulls out her portable ultrasound machine, about the size of a large laptop.
Okay, 120. Good normal heart rate. This kid is big enough I can't get a cross section of the ribs anymore.
Tuomi says even though it isn't completely necessary, they've been doing ultrasounds every day.
We've been trying to do it daily as long as she has the patience for it, just because it makes us feel better. It's not making any difference to her, but it's nice for the staff to know every day that the pup still looks fine.
The fact that this pregnancy is going well is a big deal. The past two haven't. The first pregnant female, Kiska, died from pancreatic cancer very late in her pregnancy. The pup died too.
Really devastating to lose an animal that we were watching. My kids have been watching her on our computer at home, and my daughter for weeks afterwards said, "Where's the baby, Mama?" I mean, it just was heartbreaking.
The second, Tasu, gave birth to a stillborn fetus last month, and so far, none of the scientists involved can figure out why.
We did lose Tasu's pup. It was a stillborn. It was full grown, really mature, looked great, looked in good condition, and we don't know yet.
While it's difficult to lose an animal that they've been counting on, Pelagic looks on the bright side.
And then Tasu, after the stillborn was passed, she went back out with Woody and has bred again, so a very natural progression afterwards.
But for now, the focus is on Eden. When I ask if she could give birth any day now, they tell me any hour. In Seward, I'm Sarah Bernard.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Those living with asthma know that each day their life can take several different routes. So take care of yourself with daily medication and you'll be well rested and eager to take on the day. Miss taking your medication and you'll end up with restless sleep, days at home sick, or even in the emergency room. So treat your asthma even when you're feeling your best to keep you from your worst. Information at asthmainalaska.org or 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association. Complete a bachelor program without leaving home. Whether a first-time or transfer student, the University of Alaska Southeast has the degree for you. Visit ketch.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast.
Glacier Bay Lodge may shut down after this season. Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve put out a prospectus for concession services in January, but received no bids by the March 26 deadline. Closing Glacier Bay Lodge could have a ripple effect on the economy of Gustavus. KTOO's Lisa Fu has the story.
For the past 10 years, Glacier Bay Lodge has been run by a joint venture between food services company Aramark and Huna Totem Corporation. Aramark is headquartered in Philadelphia and also supplies concession services in Denali National Park and Preserve, among other parks around the country. Besides running the lodge and restaurant, Aramark and Huna Totem are responsible for providing day boat services, camper and kayak drop-off and pickups, marine fuel sales, ground transportation between Gustavus and Bartlett Cove, retail shop, and maintaining public showers on the park campground. All these services are in danger of disappearing after this season. Susan Boudreau is superintendent at Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve. She says she asked interested parties why none of them put in a bid to run the lodge.
The bottom line is it's just not financially feasible. It hasn't been making money. It hasn't been making money for the past 20 years. And right now, you know, with the economy, it's just a risk for them. They all ran the numbers, and it's just not the right timing for them.
Boudreau is not worried about the park losing visitors if the lodge closes.
I don't really see how it can affect the national park at all, because the visitors are so intrigued about coming to the park. It's on their bucket list. It's the top of the line.
According to the National Park Service, more than 400,000 people visited Glacier Bay in 2011, most by cruise ship, but 25,000 flew or ferried into Gustavus before entering Glacier Bay. Gustavus Mayor Lou Cacioppo says losing Glacier Bay Lodge would be devastating.
It would be a very serious blow to the economy, directly and indirectly. We can guess what the fallout's going to be, but I'm sure it even encompass more than what I'm realizing at this moment.
Glacier Bay Lodge contains 56 rooms, which accounts for about half the rooms available in all of Gustavus. Cacioppo says the closure of the lodge would be a revenue hit for the city in regards to bed and sales tax. Joanne Lesh is president of the Gustavus Visitors Association and owns Gustavus Inn with her husband, Dave.
If the lodge closes, we'll lose half of the beds in town, which will decrease our ability to support all of these activities like kayaking and whale watching, charter fishing.
Boudreau says the park is exploring other options. The first is the feasibility of a temporary 2-year concession contract for day boat and camper drop-off services for the 2014 and 2015 seasons. A second is determining if the January prospectus can be revised to make the contract more financially feasible. According to the Park Service, if a new prospectus is issued, a new concession contract probably would not be in place until the 2016 operating season. A third option is extending the current contract with Aramark and Hunitotum for another 2 years. Aramark declined to comment for the story, but says they continue to speak with the National Park Service about the possibility of managing the lodge beyond the current contract, although there are a number of factors to take into consideration before a decision can be made. In the meantime, Aramark says they are focused on providing a high level of service this year. Alaska's congressional delegation in D.C. has gotten involved in the issue. Letters have been written to Interior Secretary Sally Jewell and National Park Service Director John Jarvis urging the lodge stay open. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor is proposing a new deal that would allow Chena Hot Springs to expand. But first, it has to be approved by the Assembly. And as KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, it's unclear whether Assembly members will support it.
As part of the land sale agreement, Chena Hot Springs Resort owner Bernie Carl agreed to pay fair market value for the property. But Carl didn't agree when the borough valued the land at $390 per acre. Last month, he made his opinion known before the Assembly.
I want one of you to try to pay the taxes and have the employees we have. We paid $900 a day, every day in 2012 in taxes in this borough.
He accused the borough planning department of fraud. After a closed-door executive session, the Assembly voted to continue negotiations, and Carl agreed to pay for a second appraisal. The two appraisal values would be averaged to determine the final sale price of the property. But the second appraisal never took place.
Oh, this is astonishing to me.
Assemblymember Guy Satley says he's fed up with discussing the sale.
I grew up thinking that when I agreed to things and signed things, it was fairly binding. Apparently that doesn't apply here.
Part of the Assembly's agreement last month was that improvements and easements agreed to by Carl would come at no cost to the borough. But the Assembly voted by motion and not by ordinance, so the vote was not legally binding. Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins has since brought forward a new ordinance. According to it, the resort will still pay the original appraised value at $390 per acre, but the borough will credit the resort for more than $282,000. Guy Satley says that essentially cuts the purchase price in half.
We do have an overall long-term mandate to dispose of borough land. However, we also have a mandate to get fair value for borough
In an interview last fall, Bernie Carl said easements and improvements would cost him roughly $250,000.
I'm giving up access and a right-of-way and building a bridge that I probably shouldn't have had to have done. I mean, that was negotiated, so that's what I agreed to, so I will do it. Do I think that should have had to happen to make this work? No. But that's what compromises are all about, right?
In a June 12th memorandum from borough attorney Renee Broker, the attorney writes, the mayor accepted the buyer's proposal of a credit and that the borough accepted the buyer's value of easements and improvements. According to Broker's memo, the borough doesn't have an independent appraisal of those easements or estimated costs of improvements. Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins says the agreement differs from what the assembly voted on in May because the negotiation process is entirely new.
This is the outcome that we have now from that second negotiation process. This is what we have to be able to transfer public properties that were the entitlement properties from the borough to private ownership that will end up being in taxation and economic development.
Guy Santley tried to keep the new ordinance from advancing during last week's regular assembly meeting, but Assemblyman John Davies argued against the move.
I think it's a matter of importance to the borough. And I think it's important, therefore, that we have a substantive discussion of it and that we should advance it for that purpose. Whether you agree with it or not, we should discuss it.
The Assembly will consider the new land sale exchange agreement at a work session July 3rd. It will come before the Assembly for public testimony July 11th. If the sale is approved, Carl will pay just under $300,000 for the land at 6% interest over the next 15 years. The borough still needs to survey the property boundary at a cost of $15,000. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwang.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Heather Bryan and Lisa Fu in Juneau, and Dan Bross and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C., and Sarah Bernard from Seward. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Share your culture and create lifelong connections by welcoming an AFS International Exchange student into your home for a year, semester, or 6 to 12 weeks. Information at 1-800-AFS-INFO. This message sponsored by AFS USA. Summer is a great time to schedule your child's checkup. This yearly visit lets you ask questions, track your child's growth, development, and overall health, and make sure your kids are up to date on their immunizations. Denali Kid Care and most insurance plans cover these visits, available from health care providers across Alaska. Students starting school in Alaska for the first time need a physical exam. So make your appointment for a well child checkup today. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.